From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on This Day in Maine, Thursday, October 9th, 2025. Despite some rain this week, Maine is enduring the worst drought conditions in over 20 years. Sarah Jamieson with the National Weather Service says a series of high-pressure systems this summer dried out a huge section of the U.S., and once a drought starts, she says it creates a dry air mass that perpetuates the cycle.
The weather systems that come into New England feed off those air masses, and they're dry. So when you've got the rain that we expect to move into New England, peters out because it's not being fed.
More than a quarter of Maine's population now lives in extreme drought conditions, which can bring crop damage, dry wells, and high fire danger. Jamieson says conditions may improve as the growing season ends and rainfall restores groundwater, lakes, and rivers. Some Maine farmers say the government shutdown is making it harder for them to access federal aid programs as the worst drought in two decades continues to batter the state. According to a notice on the U.S. Department of Agriculture's website, content won't be updated during the funding lapse. A search function that helps connect farmers to local farm service agency centers also appears to be down. Andy Smith, a dairy farmer in Kennebec County, says relief programs would have helped offset extra costs for feed.
It's frustrating that the government shut down and people aren't able to access important services. You know, I mean, at the same time, I recognize the politics of the situation are pretty complicated, and I find a lot of what the current administration is doing pretty alarming.
Meanwhile, the U.S. Drought Monitor reports that all of Maine is now experiencing some level of drought. Over 70 people rallied in Scarborough Wednesday evening to speak out against immigration and customs enforcement actions, both in Maine and around the country, after Democratic Congresswoman Shelley Pingree said the agency was blocking immigration lawyers from accompanying clients to its field office in the town. Scarborough resident Abigail Henry says she wants ICE to share more information about what goes on at the facility.
If what you're doing in there is not disagreeable, then why not be open and transparent about what's happening behind those walls?
A mile and a half down the road, about 20 counter-protesters rallied in support of ICE. Healthcare entrepreneur Jonathan Bush, cousin of former President George W. Bush, announced his campaign for governor of Maine in Belfast last night. Speaking to a group of supporters, Bush said he'll run his campaign on promises of economic development and cutting wasteful state programs. One of his promises was to, quote, audit Augusta.
Nobody's double-checking. Nobody's starting from zero and saying, why was this originally created? Hey, can we use this money in some other place? It doesn't happen. It blows my mind. I cannot wait to dig in and reverse that curse.
Over a dozen Republicans, Democrats, and independents have already entered the crowded race. Bush says he stands apart from other candidates by creating jobs in Belfast at his healthcare tech company, Athena Health. Travelers may notice some impacts at the Portland International Jetport as the government shutdown grinds on into its eighth day. Assistant Airport Director Zachary Sundquist says so far air traffic controllers, TSA agents, and other federal workers have been showing up to work in Portland, but he says travelers should prepare for possible disruptions as there have been staffing shortages at other airports around the country.
So even if all of our staff are here in Portland, if an aircraft is delayed getting out of an airport somewhere else in the country, your flight may be delayed or canceled just because of the positioning of the aircraft or crew, you know, given operational constraints across the country.
Sundquist says travelers should check their flight status before arriving at the airport and should be patient with federal employees at the jetport who are working without pay. In the lead-up to the Civil War, Maine was as divided as any other region of the country over slavery and emancipation. That's the core argument of a new book, The Divided North, by Maine author Carol Gardner. Gardner tells this story through the lens of two families from Portland, which in the 1800s was a stop on the Underground Railroad for many fugitives from slavery. The Rubies were African-American abolitionists, and the Gordons were a white family of ship captains and slave traders.
Now, despite the fact that they were close neighbors over two or three generations, the Rubies and the Gordons ended up on opposite sides of the slavery emancipation issue. We believe that Reuben Ruby was active in Portland's Underground Railroad. Ruby was also an outspoken advocate for immediate emancipation of all enslaved people. He was threatened, actually, both in the newspapers and with an incendiary sign posted on the door of the post office. So after the Fugitive Slave Law was passed, later in the century, in 1850, it said that, you know, all citizens had to help arrest fugitives from slavery. Well, Reuben Ruby joined Portland's Vigilance Committee, which they actually resisted the law. They hid and defended fugitives.
And then at the same time, which is sort of the central crux of the book, as I understand it, the Gordons, just nearby, were shipmasters and involved in the slave trade. So what is their story?
Many ship captains from Maine and other free states did carry Africans into slavery. So Reuben Ruby's classmate, Nathaniel Gordon II, was arrested for bringing an enslaved man into New York City in 1838. And Nathaniel's son, Nathaniel III, became the most infamous slave captain of the century. We think he made at least three successful slaving trips and was captured during a fourth. So then he was taken to New York for trial, and his two trials, because the first trial ended in a hung jury. The second trial happened because the Lincoln administration came in and decided they wanted to prosecute him a second time. They did, and they got a guilty verdict, which was a huge reversal for the United States and for the courts in general. And President Lincoln signed Gordon's death warrant, even though 11,000 citizens from Maine petitioned him to commute Gordon's sentence to life in prison.
What do the experiences of these two families tell us about Maine, the North, and really the country as a whole in the pre-Civil War period?
Lots of people believe that Northern states were uniformly anti-slavery, and that's a misconception. And just for advocating for civil rights, for example, caused lots of riots. When Frederick Douglass spoke in Portland in 1847, rioters threw stones and debris through the windows of the Friends meeting house where he was speaking. I think the issues of emancipation and equal rights were very hotly contested, even in the far corners of the Republic.
So why write this book now? You know, what lessons can be drawn from these stories to help inform our own understanding of present-day politics and political divides?
Not only citizens, but states resisted what they considered unjust laws. And I think, you know, you're seeing some of that as well right now. In 1857, the Supreme Court handed down the Dred Scott decision, declaring that people of African heritage, whether they were free or enslaved, or born here or elsewhere, were not U.S. citizens, and so had no rights under the Constitution. Several states in the North, including Maine, resisted this. Maine Supreme Court met, and they declared that people of African descent born in Maine were actually citizens, and that the men had the right to vote. I think the other really important point is that this very turbulent time, especially with the passing of the Fugitive Slave Law and the Dred Scott decision, gave birth to the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. The 14th Amendment guarantees citizenship to all those born in the United States. And as you know, the current administration is challenging that notion of birthright citizenship in the courts as we speak. The amendment also guarantees equal protection under law and due process. I think we owe Reuben Ruby's generation a huge debt of gratitude because not only did they fight for the rights of people of African heritage, but for the rights of all of us to enjoy birthright citizenship, to enjoy equal protection under law, and to benefit from due process. And so I think we show our gratitude by continuing to protect and cherish those rights.
Author Carol Gardner. Her book, The Divided North, was published in April. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 tomorrow morning, long-distance cycling. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.